they were not, these concepts were not important in an analytic way that you can sit down and write a law review article about it, you know, because that's not what the case is turned on. That's not the way the analysis flowed. You know, raising those issues in a legal, academic, scholarly sense appear to be futile. But I'm saying, as a trial lawyer and a litigator, that's false, and that's why most law review law professor type people are not ultimately of the general nature of successful litigators. That's the wrong way to focus. You've got, in two very significant indirect ways, they had an impact. One of which was that it gave them the will to fight. They had something that they were really fighting for. If you don't have the will to fight, if you don't have the commitment in that kind of situation, you're not going to make it. Now, that's you know, that may exist in any litigation. What's causing you to fight for what you want may not be the issue on which the case is going to turn from a legal point of view. But you have to understand that but for what it is that you want, you wouldn't be in the lawsuit to start with. And, you know, in a business sense, that may be something that's monetary. In a governmental sense, it may be mission-related. To people, it's their home and their history and their farm, and you know what was their forefather's farm. So, you know, that's the reason they're there. The second thing is, while we raise the issue, you sometimes raise issues in litigation that you argue for. You may realize that you've got a slim chance of succeeding on that issue. But that issue helps you a great deal from an advocacy point of view. The opportunity to put that to the judge, jury, hearing officer, whatever, whoever the trier of fact is, allows you a scope that allows you to make your case come alive and present it from a point of advocacy. And There are two essential elements of advocacy, and it met one of those. And that is that you've got to convince the trier of fact that you ought to win. Okay? The second element is simply telling him how he should find for you. Okay? But you want to convince him, first of all, that you ought to win, that it's the right, and then once you've done that, it's a heck of a lot easier to show him a reasonable basis upon which to find for you. Now, even if you don't have the first, if you've got a lock on the second, obviously, or you know, then you think, now, you know, what the other side was doing from an advocacy point of view was, you know, political or political manipulation, or they're, you know, you ought to win because this is what Chapel Hill and the university want to do. You know, that's really what's, you know, driving their train, and you know, that's how they won. They made that point that was convincing enough to the people who ultimately made the decision. And then you have, but the rest is you're rationalizing back. You're saying, okay, this law applies in this way. Not all lawsuits are decided that way. I don't mean that, but in most cases, lawsuits exist to some degree, or ones that are that hard fought, because it's not 100% crystal clear that one side is entitled to the judgment from a legal point of view. I mean, you know, what the hell are we being paid to do if there's not some question about it? If,
right.
if rational men can differ about the interpretation, then they go out and there's enough money at stake. They go out and hire lawyers, and lawyers try a lawsuit over it. Now, that's also compounded, I think, any time you're dealing with something that's public policy. It's not just money, it's public policy. You're going to settle cases where there's money at stake quite often if there's a reasonable difference of opinion. But when we're talking about how governments should act, or how communities should act, or what the interrelationship is from a public policy point of view, you can argue lots of things, and you can find law that's going to support you, or find a different interpretation, or an ambiguity, or something else. So what you have to do, in addition to arguing that, is what you're really doing is saying, trying to convince somebody, first of all, why you ought to win, why your client ought to win. And if you can convince the trier of fact that your client ought to win, and it's a public policy kind of case, it's usually relatively easy to find some reasonable justification in a legal framework as to why your position is correct. Well, you can take the Constitution or the Bill of Rights, and I'm sure familiar enough with those to see that you can argue over history and different points of interpretation. Well, statutes are drafted by the same mortal men as did the Constitution and the Bill of Rights, and arguably, for the most part, probably far less capable mortal men.
So to sum up, then you would say basically the CCCA more or less lost because y'all failed to convince the people on the EMC, and I guess the people at the Corps of Engineers, that you should win, that you would.
I think the core situation was ultimately a secondary issue, and I think ultimately they faced a tough decision, and they essentially copped out and took what the state did as their reason and rationale for having arrived at what they did, and the state made ultimately a political decision. What I'm saying is that the people who had the votes on the Environmental Management Commission were more persuaded by the not explicitly stated but very clear message of OWASA that the reason that they should find for OWASA was that because the Orange Water and Sewer Authority and the towns of Chapel Hill and Carrboro and the powers that be at the university wanted it to be done. And they found that more compelling than the advocacy of they ought to find in favor of the people in Cane Creek because it was needlessly destroying a community when there were reasonable alternatives for it. And the destruction of the way of life for, a couple of dozen families shouldn't take place. And you're weighing those kinds of advocacy decisions, and the university in Chapel Hill won.
Okay, all right. Now that makes me understand much better. Let me just ask you two more quick questions. I don't want to take too much time. Did your legal strategy kind of evolve?
That's probably why they got a couple of Duke lawyers to take the case.
Oh, is this what? Well, Liz, you tell me how that worked. the case that you present, did it change over the, I guess, 10-year period that you were more or less in court, or was it more or less the same position throughout the whole? More or less the same sort of argument.
Strategically, I think it was the same.
Mm-hmm.
the same basic, the communication of the same basic arguments and values, you know, the value of the community that was there and would be destroyed, the availability of alternatives that were perfectly logical, and the lack of any solid scientific basis for the water quality conclusions that were advanced as the reason for going to Cane Creek. I think those were the same fundamental strategic pillars. In a tactical sense, things would change. You know, later on, as we went along, the opportunity to use the quarries as an alternative became more viable and was put forth more as opposed to some other things. We also always, as a strategic concept, hoped that over time, that, you know, time might compel Owosso to go somewhere else or to give up, or that politics might change over time. Tactics changed. You know, I didn't take the same positions on cross-examination on people in Cane Creek 2 as I did in Cane Creek 1. We changed witnesses, we developed theories, we discovered that the engineering, some of the preliminary engineering work in terms of the earthen dam to be at Cane Creek were flawed. During the course of the second trial, and so you switch and you know to some degree, and you attack weaknesses that you see. But the changes, I think, were tactical. You explore new opportunities as you see them. But the overall strategic thing, I think, was pretty much the same. We put more emphasis on the Corps of Engineers permitting process later on. It seemed to provide some greater opportunities as time went on. But,
well, it looked like they had a very interesting hearing. There were a lot of people testifying.
Oh, they were for the Corps hearing.
For the hearing.
Yeah. I always thought it was interesting. I think the Colonel always looked like he thought people were going to stand up and charge the stage and assault him, I think. He didn't know what a bad hearing looked like. I'd been to some for the Corps.
Come on. Well, do you think had the CCCA had more money to spend that you could have done things any differently, that would have helped any? Or do you think that was not an issue?
Yes, but not in a nickel and dime sense. Yes, if we'd had significantly, if we'd had significantly greater resources, yes, I think we could have fought it. Certainly, that was a severe limitation in what we were able to do. Obviously, the lawyers who fought it did it on a very minimal basis, but even so. There were limits to the amount of time we could devote on that kind of a basis. There were limitations, all kinds of resource and logistical limitations. If we had had a multiple of the amount of money available that we did, yes, in heavy, protracted, multi-issue litigation of this type, a well-funded operation is always much better than one that's very underfunded.
You mean in terms of you could have done more research and presented more sets of facts on different points, or what could you have?
Oh, it's hard to say. Research, probably not so much from a legal point of view. I think we did a lot. I think from a, certainly having, if we'd had a multiple of resources available for what we did, we could have done more from an expert witness, scientific and engineering. We had some good experts, and I think presented very good, credible things, but it was not any in-depth development stuff. It was not. We certainly could have done more in that regard, developing other alternatives, attacking their scientific theories. Chopping up on their engineering stuff better. From a legal point of view, what we could have done would have been to have assaulted them on a wider front over a greater period of time. We could have pursued more things at a greater depth and in parallel to a greater degree. We could have put a lot more pressure on them in that regard. There's some things that we simply never pursued. There wasn't resources. When you're dealing with such a limited set of financial resources, obviously you're betting on the fastest ponies you can find and hope that they come in. You can't bet on every horse in the race.
Right. Well, I'm interested just to end up. Do you think that this trying this case affected you in any way? Sort of, changed some ideas you had or anything like that?
In what sense?
In any sense, just in sort of how you, look at law or the way it came out. I mean, obviously this is one case of many cases. But, is there anything special about it?
Oh, I think it's probably the last time I'll ever do a semi pro bono public interest kind of lawsuit. But that doesn't mean, not that it was a bad experience or, they're wonderful people and they were great to work for in that sense. Financially, I just never would want to try and do that again. I guess you get, and that's, when you're, I guess when I first started the case, I just got married. But as you get older and you have children to educate and bills to pay,
and
mortgages to pay and everything else, you maybe. But I think that's more of a natural evolution toward middle age than it is any. It's not that I had a bad experience. It was a very bad experience financially, I suppose. In a sense, but not one that I regretted. I don't regret that I did it. I just kind of said, well, I'm glad I took it. It was certainly not good financially, but I'm glad I took it. But I don't think I'll do another one.
Did you have any idea it was going to take that long? That it was going to be 10 years?
Cool. I don't think I ever really addressed the question to myself. No, not. I don't think I expected it. If you'd asked me then, do you think it'll take 10 years? I would have said no, 2 or 3 years, I guess. But I also would have known, having tried these kind of cases before, that they have a way of going on forever. So that bothers a lot of people. I have relatives that say to me, and some other lawyers, how can you get, you still got that case, My father always, would say that to me. But never bothered me. That's just a lot of the kind of litigation that I've done, and I just kind of accepted it as a fact of life. You know, it's just how you do your job.
Why'd you take it in the first place? Okay, somebody came and asked
you. I guess I've always liked reservoir litigation. I think it's interesting. I think that they had a good cause, a good issue. They were nice people. And they paid me the retainer I asked for.
So that's how it is. Well, I guess that's pretty much what I was interested in finding out. It's been real helpful.
Okay,
can you think of anything else regarding the case that is very important that we didn't touch on?
No, there are a lot of legal issues that have long since disappeared into inaccessible memory banks. If I sat down and went through pleadings and things that would come back to mind, but I don't think so.
All right. Well, thank you so much.
Okay, you're welcome.
Appreciate it.